Hello and welcome to another Premier League preview pod exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. Today we're looking forward to, or looking ahead to, I'm not sure if looking forward to is quite the right expression. Nevertheless, we're looking ahead to the game against Southampton on Tuesday night at St Mary's, off the back of a 1-0 defeat to Southampton at St Mary's on Saturday. With me, as always, Lewis Ambrose. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Andrew.
Before we get talking Premier League and Southampton and all the rest of it, we should talk a little bit about Martin Ødegaard, who is about to complete his move from Real Madrid on loan until the end of the season. Your thoughts on this one? Myself and James talked about it a bit earlier on the Arscast Extra, and we're basically saying that when you look at the market, when you look at the players available and the talent out there, to have brought in or be on the brink of bringing in a guy of this talent is really quite exciting.
Yeah, I think this is about as close to a no-lose deal that you can have.
Mm.
Just a guy on loan. And it's also much, much better than I expected Arsenal to manage and to pull off this window. I thought we'd maybe get somebody a bit older on loan. You know, obviously linked with Isco, for example. And I think, yeah, players that are sort of Christian Eriksen we were linked with at some point as well. I don't think there's ever anything to it. But players that are sort of, I don't know, washed up, nothing to prove, no move to play for, playing out the last couple of years of their elite careers, if you can call them that anymore. And yeah, like their career's not going to go on to anything. I think to manage to firstly identify or find somebody available, but then actually go and attract them and convince them to join us, who has everything to prove and everything to play for, should be really exciting to everyone, and a massive talent at that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's a smart, really smart piece of business. I know we've all had our concerns and criticisms of some of the deals that we've done, and rightly so. You know, there's no defending some of them, but to have, you know, obviously there's a relationship there with Real Madrid because we have Dani Ceballos, and we did two pretty uncomplicated loan moves for Dani Ceballos. I think those, what's interesting about those loan moves is that they were done between the clubs with the player involved, obviously, but there were no agents involved in that deal. So, you know, there's obviously good contact between the executive levels at the two clubs. But just, you know, having him available and having him, you know, come to Arsenal, when I suppose there'd be other clubs out there at this moment in time who would be looking at making similar kind of signings, making loan signings. And this is a guy, like you say, who's got a lot to prove. You know, he was supposed to spend 2 years on loan at Real Sociedad, and they cut it short by a year, brought him back, hasn't worked out under Zidane. So he's either sort of playing for his next move, potentially away from Real Madrid, playing his way back into Zidane's thoughts, which seems to be a difficult thing to do once you're out of them, or playing his way into the thoughts of whoever's next at Real Madrid, because there's the, you know, very strong possibility that there could be somebody else in charge next season. So from a purely motivational point of view, it's, you know, it's a really good move for him to showcase his talent at Premier League level.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess you'd probably consider it a step forward for him as well. Obviously, spent that year at Real Sociedad and did really well by all accounts. Got them, helped get them into the Europa League and to the Copa del Rey final.
Mm.
I think still stepping up to the Premier League, coming to Arsenal, is sort of, a bit of a between step between playing for Real Madrid every week right now, where Arsenal are especially at the moment, and playing for Real Sociedad. So yeah, I think he's obviously a little bit slight, and people might have concerns about him coming into English football and shining when he might get knocked around a bit. But I mean, how many players have we, for every player that you can say that's a factor for, we've seen a player who is slight who's come and, you know, David Silva come and dominated the league.
Yeah,
week in,
true.
Week out, so
Santi Cazorla.
Santi Cazorla, Cesc Fabregas as well. So I think it's a little bit of a straw man. I don't think there's any sort of real true correlation between how big you are and how ready you are to be kicked and how successful you actually have to be in the Premier League. And I think he's a really, really interesting player because I don't think there's anyone quite like him in the Arsenal squad. I think Mikel Arteta, he spoke about a few months ago, didn't he? Wanting to play a 4-3-3 but not having the profile in his squad. And I think if you sort of boil down central midfield players. People talk about number 10 not really existing anymore or being dead, or you know, in the way that we all recognise the number 10.
Yeah, you got to take the word mercurial out of it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. I think nowadays you can almost sort of categorise most central midfielders in, if you sort of take that 6, 8, 10 thing, you can most of them are a 6 or an 8, or an 8 or a 10, rather than, you know, you'd say maybe Aaron Ramsey was an 8/10 and Granit Xhaka or Thomas Partey a 6/8. I don't think there is an 8/10 in the Arsenal squad. Obviously, Emile Smith-Rowe is playing like that at the moment, but further forward, and Bukayo Saka, maybe a lot of people think he could play like that as well. Joe Willock is probably the only one, though, that I would really categorise in the Arsenal squad of really being that sort of player.
Mm.
And I think Odegaard is that sort of player, more or less anyway, from what I've seen. So I think it gives Mikel Arteta a few interesting options with his team, obviously also the ability to actually rotate and rest Emile Smith-Rowe. But maybe possibly a little bit more, you know, you possibly play them together and you have a little bit more technicality in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people have talked about him as, you know, backup or cover or a competition for Smith-Rowe. But I think what's really interesting about this move is that they're very different players. I mean, Smith-Rowe has given us creativity, but he's done it, you know, with his link work, with his movement, with short passes, with, you know, creating space, creating overlaps, creating, you know, outnumbering the opposition, and just, you know, movement as a way of providing creativity. What Odegaard gives you is passing ability as well. He does have this amazing passing ability, or a really solid eye for a pass, you know, dropping into that kind of half space between the back four and the midfield and then threading a ball through. I'll put a link in the show notes for this one. I'm sure you've seen the video of, I think it was a pass he made last season for Real Sociedad. I can't remember who it was against.
This is the one to the back post.
Yeah, to Oyarzabal. Yeah.
Yeah, and the goalkeeper has no idea whether or not he can come for it and reach it or,
Yeah, but just amazing. A brilliant pass. So, you know, to have two players who can give you creativity in different ways is obviously a good thing, because, you know, you can suss a player out. Like, I'm not saying Smith-Rowe would never be effective again, but when teams start to get used to what he gives Arsenal, you know, they'll work to try and negate some of those qualities. But if you've got a guy like Odegaard who can come in and you know, play those passes from deep, it does give you an extra little bow to your arrow, or what's the word I'm looking for, a string to your bow, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it, to be honest. I think the fact that he can play in the same position as Smith Rowe, which currently we don't have anybody else who can, but that he can play it in a different way can make us more dangerous too. Looking just at the sort of the numbers earlier, and Smith Rowe's obviously been really good since he came into the team, but he's only attempting 1.6 dribbles per 90 minutes, and he's sort of completing about 30% of those dribbles. Odegaard last season for Real Sociedad attempted over 3 dribbles per 90 minutes, which is obviously about double Smith Rowe so far this season. It's since the start of last season, it's more than Bukayo Saka per game as well, and he completes them at a slightly higher success rate than Bukayo Saka since he came into the Arsenal team last season as well. So this is a player that, as you say, has an eye for a pass and picking a pass, and probably a little bit less of the combination play that we're used to from Smith Rowe. These quick one-touch passes. He's a player who will carry the ball a little bit more, maybe take things on his shoulders to flip a game a little bit more decisively with sort of individual 1v1 actions rather than combining with teammates. Yeah. And I think whenever I've seen him, he works hard too. He's not he doesn't shirk that side of the game. He might not be the biggest, but he's not a player who sort of, is not interested in tracking back or getting stuck in. It's obviously not what his game's built around, but not a player who's going to, sort of compromise, or we're going to have to compromise to put him in the team. And as we've already touched on, with loads to prove as well, these performances that he has at Arsenal for the rest of the season, I mean, firstly, he has to work to get in the team. And the performances that he has for us will decide where he plays football next season. They'll decide if he likes it at Arsenal, if there's any chance of him staying. They'll decide if any other top clubs are interested, if Real Madrid do decide to let him go again. Or if there is a new manager, if he gets into the Real Madrid team or a chance of getting into the Real Madrid team next season. So he's 22. He has so much riding on this move. And we... To me, anyway, there's sort of no risk on our part. If he's completely average, then so oh well, never mind. It didn't work out, and it hasn't really cost us any money.
Yeah. I mean, just very finally on him, do you have any concerns about the fitness side of things, given that he's only played 9 games this season for Real Madrid? You know, there you could say it's going to take him some time to get properly match fit, and I think that's true. You know, assuming that he can do that relatively quickly, though, what you've got is a super fresh player if you're looking at this with the glass half full.
Yeah, so I think we've got mostly players who have played a lot of football without any real break. I think people talk about lockdown last year and then the restart as if footballers had a bit of a break, but they were keeping fully fit because they didn't know. They had to be ready for football to restart at any moment. So mentally as well as physically, it must have been exhausting. We've got a player who mentally is getting a fresh start and already had one in the summer that obviously hasn't worked out. And a player physically who will probably need a bit of time to get up to shape.
Mm.
But we play a lot of games. We play, I think, every midweek now until the middle of February. Or we play then in the Europa League. That kicks in. I think we have maybe 1 week or 2 weeks without a midweek game only now, between now and the end of February. So there'll be plenty of opportunities for him to sort of play 20 or 30 minutes until he's ready to start games. And then there'll be plenty of opportunities as well to play him for an hour and take him off if he's not managing to quite get up to speed yet. So
I'm
quietly confident that they'll manage to take things slowly and hopefully, fingers crossed, that this is, I'm sure, part of the thinking that he can share Smith Rowe's role or Saka's role, and it means that those two avoid injury as well.
Yeah, true, true. And obviously, if we progress, and hopefully we do in the Europa League, then you know there's going to be midweek football for much longer than that. So fingers crossed on that point. So that should be confirmed, if not later today, tomorrow. An exciting signing, and let's hope you know we see the best of him over the coming weeks and months. Southampton away. Were you surprised at how strong the Southampton team was for the game on Saturday? Because Mikel Arteta obviously was going to rotate. I think everybody knew he was going to rotate. I'm not sure there were too many surprises in the team lineup, you know, based on what we thought was going to happen. But I do wonder if perhaps he had suspected or had kind of gambled a bit on Ralf Hasenhüttl also rotating a bit, which he didn't. Really, I think he changed his goalkeeper, and that was about the only real change from his strongest 11 there or thereabouts beyond players who are out injured. So, were you surprised at Southampton's strength on Saturday?
Yes and no. I think we're all very used to obviously managers prioritising the league now, and that goes beyond, you know, the top teams. We see it every year now, the teams bottom of the Premier League or mid-table in the Premier League. Yesterday, Sheffield Wednesday played a few kids and when they played Everton. So it's just the nature of now that these games are sort of seen as extra, I guess, and the league is everybody's bread and butter and where everybody wants to win. At the same time, I think Southampton's squad, the drop off from the first 11 to maybe first 13 or 14 players to the rest is much more significant than a lot of other Premier League teams. I think Ralf Hasenhüttl obviously is doing a really, really good job. I think maybe the way that they've done this season has people overrating the actual quality at Southampton a little bit. And I would say that I think they've only in the league, they've only won one of the last 6 or 7 games. And I wonder if they're just above us in the league. I think they're 4 points, 3 points from a European place. So you maybe would have thought, yeah, he'll sort of rest players and look to go strong in the league. I think on the other hand, he knows, firstly, that they needed a win. They needed a win to get back on track and lift the mood again around the club. And I also think that if they're being realistic, Ralph Hasenhüttl knows Southampton probably have a better chance of winning a few cup ties and winning the FA Cup than they have of finishing in the top six this season,
yeah,
with so many clubs competing for those places. So I was a little bit surprised at how strong it was, but I did think there'd be a strong team. And I thought we put out a pretty strong team as well. I thought there might be a couple more changes than there were. And I would say that obviously you're out the cup and that's the nature of the competition. It's very final at the final whistle. But at the same time, we went out because of an own goal. We didn't play well. That's not to sort of say that we did play well, but we played pretty much Southampton's first 11. We had a bit of an unfortunate own goal. They did deserve to go in the lead, I'd say, around that in that first half. But yeah, it just sort of happens in the cup. You let in a scrappy goal and you can't score one and you're out.
Yeah, I mean, does that give you some cause for optimism for tomorrow night, in the sense that, look, I think Southampton did look the better team at times, and we found it a bit difficult to cope with their press. You know, I don't think it was helpful that Gabriel was, you know, obviously rusty, having been out for a month. Rob Holding had his, you know, worst game on the ball for quite some time. We had Cedric playing at left back. We had Elneny, who's usually really reliable. You know, unspectacular, but you generally know what you get from him, and I think we got less than we normally do. You know, those aspects of dealing with a high press, playing out from the back, et cetera, you know, make it a bit more difficult. So, you know, is it encouraging that based on the team that we put out, with all the rustiness, some of the underperformers, you know, at the back and further up the pitch, of course, you know, when you look at what we could bring back into the team, it might just augur well for this particular game, given that we were playing without the player. And look, it's not to put everything on Smith Rowe, but he does kind of make things tick for us.
Yeah, he does. Him and Bukayo Saka in combination, I'd say. And we were probably a little bit better the second half when Saka came on. I think it has a little bit to do with Southampton and them tiring and also having a lead to protect. But at the end of the day, like I say, we lost by a narrow margin against what was pretty much Southampton's first 11. And as much as we did rest players, this was our first 11 a few weeks ago, more or less. We're talking about Boxing Day when Smith Rowe and Saka came into the team.
Yeah.
So,
well, Saka had been in it, in fairness, but just playing slightly different role.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. There was no Aubameyang as well, obviously. But this was more or less the first Arsenal 11. Thomas Partey had been injured, that had us all worried that we might actually get relegated. So I think that team is probably expected to lose to Southampton expected to have a very close game, at least, with Southampton. And that's pretty much what we got. On another day, we nick a goal at the end, maybe. The problem with this Arsenal team right now has been that they do not come back into games. So we've picked up 1 point, funnily enough, against Southampton when we've trailed this season. So every other game that we've gone behind, lost in the Premier League. It's a huge problem that we don't... And I'm sure it's... I think, anyway, I would say that that's connected to the fact that we haven't been able to break anyone down. So, obviously, as soon as we go behind, teams are even more determined to not let a goal in and sit back and make sure we don't have much space to play in.
Yeah.
Smith Rowe and Saka have, in combination, sort of been the solution to that problem. And we played without Smith Rowe at the weekend. We played Saka, I don't know, 10 minutes on the wing before he moved to left back. And I think we'll just see a very different Arsenal. We'll obviously see Thomas Partey from the start as well. There might be another change at the back. Gabriel is maybe not fully fit yet, not fully recovered, and it's taken quite a while for him to even get back into the squad after he tested positive for coronavirus. And Kieran Tierney will be there. I think it will just be a very different Arsenal, with sort of all of the square pegs in square holes, as opposed to what we saw at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back at the game that we played against Southampton in mid-December, the team that night was Leno, Tierney, Gabriel, Saka, Holding, Ceballos, Maitland-Niles, Elneny, Aubameyang, Pepe and Nketiah. That was the starting 11 subs on the night, where Louise, Willock and Cedric, with Lacazette staying on the bench, Willian staying on the bench. Of course, we were down to 10 men after about an hour. Gabriel was sent off. So it was a real hang-on job there against Southampton. You know, in terms of who else is going to come back into the team, I think we can see that Tierney will be back, Smith Rowe will be back, Saka probably back out on the right-hand side. What do we do on the left if Aubameyang is not fit or available? We don't quite know what's happening there, and fingers crossed it's nothing serious. And if he's available, that obviously is good news for him and the situation that he finds himself in. But, you know, let's assume for the moment that, you know, he's not going to be available to us. Gabriel Martinelli started out there. He was quiet against Southampton in the cup game, but I think you can in some ways put that down to the fact he had Cedric behind him. He also had Willian as the nominal number 10. There was a stat, wasn't there, by halftime that Willian had made more passes to the referee than either Martinelli or Pepe. And, you know, not to pile on the guy, but clearly it's an issue when you're not combining. You're number 10, you're not combining with either of the wide forwards in the team. So that's definitely an issue. But we know that Tierney and Martinelli can connect. We've seen that. We know that Smith Rowe and Martinelli and Tierney can connect. We know that Smith Rowe and Saka and whoever plays on the right hand side or right back can connect, whether it's Hector Bellerin or it's Cedric or whatever. So would you be tempted to give Martinelli another go on that left hand side?
Yeah, I think I would be surprised if it wasn't Martinelli. I think we talked about the Odegaard signing and how that will give somebody that can play there that isn't Emile Smith Rowe and can play in a relatively similar way and play that role in a way that can really bring something to the team, not like we've seen from Willian when he's played. I think we've more or less Kieran Tierney aside now with Odegaard when that's gone through. We've more or less got sort of two players that are similar in every single position. I think you compare Saka playing to Nicola Pepe. So they're obviously different and bring something else to the team. But, you know, Xhaka, Partey, Ceballos, Elneny, we've got midfielders that can sort of interchange and to more, you know, more successful, less successful degrees do each other's jobs. Two left-footed centre-backs, two right-footed centre-backs. And I think Martinelli is the non-Aubameyang left winger. I think he's the player that plays like Aubameyang in that position role. If Kieran Tierney is playing, then great. And I'm pretty sure that then we'd see Martinelli. Maybe we'd see Saka out there and see something else on the right. I don't know if that would be Pepe who could come into the team.
It would have to be Pepe, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't know that you could really make it Willian. You know, and again, I've talked enough about Willian today on the Arsecast Extra with James, so I don't want to go there again. But were there elements of Pepe's performance on Saturday that were encouraging to you? Because, you know, he's one of those where your reaction to the way he plays can be quite, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, I was really, really frustrated with him on Saturday in the cup game. But then when you sort of step back from it a little bit and you look at some of the things that he did, some of the moments he created, you have to acknowledge that those were positive. Those were good things. It's just when he miscontrols a simple pass from Hector Bellerin, or he can't take the ball with him when he's on the run, he sort of does a Theo Walcott and kind of leaves it behind him. Those things stick more easily in the memory, I think.
Yeah, I thought he was really frustrating at the weekend. But what you can say for him from the game, if nothing else, is that he didn't hide. And I think that's something that some people would maybe accuse Willian of. I think sort of, you know, making sure he's standing in a position where he might not get the ball. And I think we've seen players this season at different times do that in different positions. I think Pepe, at least at the weekend, I didn't see that. I saw a player who miscontrolled the ball or played a poor pass or made a mistake, but was always there the next time to receive the ball again. And we need it as well. We need him to perform at some point. Not because we paid so much money for him, not for any reason other than we need to win football matches, and Bukayo Saka can't play every single one of them. I think you know, I think this could be a huge opportunity for whoever plays on the wings. Southampton have got, I think they saw today, Kyle Walker-Peters and Ryan Bertrand are both likely to miss the game. I think they said Bertrand's definitely out. And
he's suspended, yeah.
Okay, and Walker-Peters, I think, is doubtful at least. So the fact that whoever plays on the wings for us are likely to be facing two backup right-backs and left-backs, or at the absolute worst, a half-fit Kyle Walker-Peters, that they should be really fancying themselves on Tuesday night. I think maybe it is a game where you would see Pepe. And at the end of the day, we have subs. You know, we cannot play Saka in every single game, or we can't play Martinelli maybe too much too soon after he's coming off such a serious injury and he's had little setbacks along the way. It helps, obviously, that we played so early on Saturday. That's something. But if we're up against, you know, a reserve left-back and a reserve right-back at Southampton, then what better time to play Pepe? And at the end of the day, if, you know, he's not doing it, if he's not delivering, then you can just take him off. Martinelli, if he doesn't start, will be on the bench, and that option will always be there to move Saka onto the other wing and put Martinelli on. So I think, personally, I would like to see Saka and Aubameyang, Martinelli, if Aubameyang isn't available. But I don't think it would be the worst drama in the world if Pepe did start. Not the amount of drama it will probably cause on Twitter.
Very true. And you know what? I'm just sort of going back and thinking about that Ødegaard pass and the players that we might have on that left-hand side making runs for those kind of passes. When you think about Aubameyang, when you think about Tierney, when you think about Martinelli, particularly Martinelli, the sort of movement that he has coming from that outside to inside left channel. You know, if you've got a player of Ødegaard's vision, that could be really, really exciting. Obviously, we're not going to see it tomorrow night because I think it's a little bit too soon for the new boy, but hopefully we'll see it soon. Fingers crossed we can take the 3 points, Lewis, as ever. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Andrew.
Thanks to all you guys for listening. Thanks for your support here on Patreon, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.